The question was asked, nowadays, in the year 5777, can an Ashkenazi marry more than one wife? Okay, so let's begin with the sources. We're opening the Shulchan Aruch, the first siman of Eben Ezer, meaning this is the first chapter on marriage laws, where the Shulchan Aruch discusses how every person has to get married and have children, and at 18 years old is a good idea, and a person has to have a boy and a girl, and what happens if he had children before he converted to Judaism, and how many women may a person marry. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, Rabbeinu Gershom Echirim. There was a big rabbi named Rabbeinu Gershom, and he made a ban. He made a cherem, meaning a halachic prohibition with a halachic curse, al hanoseh al ishto, over anyone who would marry a second wife on top of his wife. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, "Velo pashta tachanato b'chol ha'aratzot." Not all countries accepted his institution. "Velo echrim el atzov el v'chamishi." And his ban was only until the end of that millennium, which ended 777 years ago. It ended a long time ago, right? Okay, so now I'm going to read Shulchan Aruch. Just let's begin with Sfardim and then move on to Ashkenazim. I skipped the Ramah. Shulchan Aruch says, "Tov la'asot takana b'charmim v'niduim on mishi yisa yisha al-ishto." It's a good idea to make bans and prohibitions on anyone that dares marry a second wife. So Shulchan Aruch says, even though Rabbeinu Gershom's ban finished, it's a good idea to make new bands. Make sure this doesn't happen.
Is there a reason? It seems like very odd that there's a time limit that after a certain period you could remarry.
That's a good question for a Thursday night. Let's finish this and then we can get on to that. Now, now we're going to move forward with the Ramah. So the Ramah says, I'm going to skip what's not so relevant to us. The Ramah says, "Uvimkom she'en harishona bat gerushin." What happens if his first wife is not divorceable? Kigon she'nishtatit. Let's say she went insane. Oh, I'm sorry, I need you to shift for the camera. I'm sorry. He cannot divorce her because in order to divorce a wife, then she has to have the intelligence to accept a divorce. So what happens if something happened and she can't? You know, she went insane, God forbid. So, or could be that halachically he has a right to divorce her. She's doing things that are completely destructive to the marriage that you can't expect any husband to live with it. She pours cyanide into his soup. And after he takes one sip, he says, "This doesn't taste right." She goes, "There's cyanide in there. You think there was enough to kill you?" Well, we'll find out. And he runs to the emergency room and he's living. And then she says, "We could continue this marriage, but enjoy the food I bake, because you'll never know. How could you expect them to live in such a marriage?" So then he says, "Okay, I understand, it's over, fine. I'm not going to live in a situation where my life's in danger. You can't expect me to go to sleep with a snake in bed, right? It's a dangerous situation to stay in this marriage. Fine." And she says, "I'm not accepting a divorce contract from you. No way I'm going to let you marry someone else. You're stuck with me. Finished." So now what do you do? So Rabbeinu Gershom said, he put a clause in his prohibition. He said, when a husband is stuck in a scenario where he cannot divorce his wife because she went insane, or she refuses to accept the divorce contract, but the situation is such that the rabbis present see that he really should divorce her. This isn't a situation where you can make things work. Then we should be lenient and permit him to marry another wife, says the Ramah. So there are scenarios where we have what's called the heter mea rabbanim. that you put together 100 different rabbis, and they all have to sign on this form which says, we permit so-and-so to marry a second wife, even though Rabbeinu Gershom said not, but with this clause it's okay, Rabbeinu Gershom allowed us. And you need 100 rabbis from 3 different congregations, from 3 different continents. They wanted to ensure that a person who has political clout couldn't get everyone to see things his way. People from different countries and different continents, it's much harder to influence them. And by making this clause, you ensure that politics won't make it happen, and that people aren't only working out of their perspective. You know, in France, she says, I will not drink wine. So that's a cardinal sin. How could you be married to a Frenchman, not drink wine? And in Spain, she says, I will not wear one of those pompous hats. And in the United States, she says, What do the Americans do? I will not let... What? I will vote for Trump. Okay, so there can be things which in your society they are things which are anathema. But anyone that comes from a different country might look at it and say, that's not grounds for divorce. So Rabbeinu Gershom said, you need to have 100 rabbis. Some of them have to have at least 3 from different congregations from 3 different continents. Okay, so there are scenarios where this was done. I mean, I know people where this was done. There are people living today who had this done. Famous people, like the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, whose wife wouldn't go with him to Lakewood. She said they couldn't have kids together, I think, also. But
go to Lakewood from where?
Israel.
Aren't you halachically, isn't there a clause about
that? Oh, okay, but you see, her own uncle signed the legal document that says she's in the wrong, she's destroying the marriage.
She's in the wrong.
Interesting,
they
right?
Talk about it in advance.
It's a good question. I'm just telling you, her own family members, the rabbis in her own family, agreed to sign the contract against her, permitting her husband to marry a second wife. And I think she never accepted the get. I think till today, she's living somewhere in Israel, and she never took the get. I think. I don't know if she ever accepted the get. So he has 2 wives. So we have this clause here. What? Okay. So we move forward. It says the Ramah. When the Shulchan Aruch says there are areas that never accepted this institution of Rabbeinu Gershom, you have to know for a fact that where you live, they did not accept it. But if you live in a place where you're not sure what the custom is, you're the first Jew to settle in Kochav Yaakov. So now you're building a new settlement. What minhag does the place have? There is no minhag. We're creating a whole new community in a place. Well, says the Ramah, the default is that unless you can prove otherwise, every country accepted Rabbeinu Gershom. Everywhere. If you can tell me I'm Yemenite and in Yemen we marry 2 wives, that's our custom. Okay? You're Yemenite? Okay. So, can I move to Yemen and marry a second wife? That's a good question. But so point one is we assume everyone has this custom. Point two is if you're in a place that not, okay, so you're in a place that not. But the general assumption is everyone has it. There's a lot to discuss here. Let's just take one footnote here. Says the Ramah, even though the Rabbeinu Gershom's institution technically ended 777 years ago, umikol makom, nonetheless, says the Ramah, bechol medinot eilu atakana v'aminag b'mkomo omed. We still have the custom, says the Ramah. We still have the institution. Ve'en osin bet nashin. And no one marries 2 wives, says the Ramah. When was the last time you heard of a Jew in Krakow marrying 2 wives? We don't do that. V'kofin b'charamot v'niduyin mishover v'noseh bet nashim. And we enforce it, says the Ramah. If someone wants to marry 2 wives, we will put him into halachic ostracism. We will put a rabbinic curse on him. We enforce this thing. We don't let him do that. legaresh achat mehem. If a person does it, we tell him you got to divorce one of them. We're not going to let you stay married to two wives. No polygamy. Torah permits it. Rabbis don't. Finished. You can't do it. Which one does he have to divorce? The second one, because he had no right to marry the second one, unless the first one says I want out. But if the first one says no, I'm in, so then he has to divorce the second one, because that's the one he married illegitimately. Okay.
But isn't it up to the man to have control over divorce?
Okay, but here we're forcing him. We're saying, hey buddy, you shouldn't have married that second wife. You're destroying the marriage. Now, there's another point, which is that there are, in marriage, there are self-evident norms that you go with. When you're marrying a woman, so then there are things that are understood that are built into the marriage, even if they're not spelled out in the contract. It happens to be
like
that the chief rabbinate of Israel puts this in. He will not marry a second wife. That's a clause that's written in, because I guess we have so many Yemenites and people from countries where they don't necessarily have this custom, so they write it into the ksuba. The chief rabbinate, many ksubas I've seen, have it written in, a parenthetical note. He will not marry a second wife. Even if it's not written, a wife could argue, this has been the norm where I come from for so many years. I don't even know anyone that has two wives. That's what the Tiferet Yisrael writes, that it was the norm even in the days of the Mishnah. You rarely find a rabbi that was married to two wives at the same time, simultaneously. And so Tiferet Yisrael argues that even before Rabbeinu Gershom came along, this was a norm. And if a husband would want to do different, that would be something which they'd really have to discuss before the wedding. Because she could say, I didn't think you were going to do such a thing. None of my friends do it. No one I know does it. There's no one in our community that ever did it. So it was really not so common. And it seems like it wasn't so common throughout Jewish history. So it's not clear that even today, you know, if a Yemenite came along and said, I'm marrying a second wife. I'm not sure his wife couldn't argue that he can't do that, because it was a self-evident clause in their marriage that he wouldn't do it. I don't know you're Yemenite. You see, you told me you're Yemenite. How was I supposed to know that? There are good Sephardim who are called Ovadia. I'm supposed to know Ovadia is a Yemenite name. So you tell me, my great-great-grandfather came from Yemen. How would I know that? It at least needs to be discussed. I was told by a Yemenite friend of mine that even among the Yemenites, it was generally looked upon as what the lowest class would do. A friend of mine told me that, a Yemenite friend of mine told me that in Yemen, it wasn't like everyone was marrying a second wife. It was the lowest class that needed a woman at his side working with him in the fields. And he needed another woman taking care of the kids at home. So if he was so impoverished, so then they would sometimes marry a second wife who was really his helper out in the field. Or his helper back in the house. I don't remember which came first. But he said that even in Yemen it was frowned upon. No one looked at it as, take on as many wives as you can. He said that was not the culture, that was not the vantage point. It was looked at, if you're so down and out, fine. What's interesting is which wife would want to marry and be the second fiddle. But I don't know how that works. I guess if it's socially accepted, or if she can't find a better shidduch. I don't know. So at any rate, bottom line, today, for the rest of us, you cannot marry second wife. If you have thoughts in that direction, consult with your local Orthodox rabbi. Okay.